outdoor gear while supporting a local veteran-owned business? Check out NorCal Outfitters, proudly based right here in Redding, California. Built on a passion for the outdoors and the values that make our community strong, NorCal Outfitters offers apparel and gear designed for hunters, anglers, outdoorsmen, and anyone who loves the outdoor lifestyle. And right now, we're excited to announce our partnership with Ultimate Predator Outfitters to give you a chance to win an incredible 3-day guided California hog hunt experience. Your ticket includes lodging, expert guides, and the opportunity to create memories that last a lifetime. Whether you're a seasoned hunter or looking to experience your first guided hunt, this is an opportunity you won't want to miss. Support local, support veteran owned, and enter today by purchasing your raffle tickets at ncofit.com. That's ncofit.com. NorCal Outfitters, born for the wild, worn for life.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
He was the most congenial man, but also a man of firm convictions. And I think that amazed the press. Their feeling was that a man who was that congenial wouldn't be tough. He was tough.
This is your host, Scott Bertrand. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Don Hodel, former Secretary of Energy and Secretary of the Interior under President Ronald Reagan. He has a new memoir called Called to Serve. We'll talk in depth with Don in just a little bit. And later in today's program, Dr. Stephanie Lawbeck from Hillsdale's Physics Department tells us about nanotechnology and magnetism. First, we're joined now by Don Hodel. He is a former Secretary of Energy and former Secretary of the Interior in the Reagan administration, also served inside leadership in the Christian Coalition and Focus on the Family, among other things, throughout his long and distinguished career. He has a new memoir out. It's called Called to Serve, My Path to President Reagan's Cabinet and Beyond. Don, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Scott.
You serve as Secretary of the Interior of Energy, Under Secretary of Interior. I mentioned your leadership roles elsewhere throughout your life. You say early in the book that you always felt led to take on new assignments, new challenges from time to time throughout your life. Are leaders like you born that way? Do you feel like you were always supposed to be in that sort of position inside whatever environment you were in?
You know, Scott, I really don't know. But as I wrote this book, I realized that in my life, I had not sought these positions over and over. Positions seemed to seek me, and I responded positively on most occasions. Occasionally, I felt I was not called to do something, but most of the time, I didn't seek the position, but when it came knocking, I rose to the challenge.
I want to start back in the late 1960s and your career in politics when it started working in 1968 for Oregon, Reagan for president, and being involved in the Reagan campaign at that time. What was politics like in the late 1960s, and how did you find yourself attracted to a candidate like Reagan in 68?
Well, as I relate in the book, I think my interest in politics was triggered partly because my father was impressed when I was age 5 at having met a state representative. And I followed politics, read about it, listened to it, and was active in college in the Young Republicans. And at that time, in Oregon, in 1964, we went through a very hostile campaign in the Republican primary for president between Barry Goldwater and Nelson Rockefeller. And my goal was to try to fill precincts at a time when people were polarized, which is akin to what we see today, but it was within the party.
Mm-hmm.
Very disruptive disagreement between them. And I found myself having to play the role of a peacemaker. And it was only marginally successful in doing that.
You go on to work for the Bonneville Power Administration, and as part of that position, end up testifying in Washington, D.C., in front of congressmen and senators. At Inside Call to Serve, you say you learned that however thin your knowledge of the subject matter might be, you almost always knew more than the senators or representatives asking questions. Do you think, or at least feel, that's still likely the same case today in our politics? Is it something that we should be concerned about?
I don't think it's something we should be concerned about. I think it's a very natural aspect of the process. The congressman or the senator has before him one of many agencies that may report to his committee. His knowledge is going to be relatively superficial, except in special cases.
Mm-hmm.
Staff may have deeper knowledge, but the person from the organization, the agency that's testifying to him, ought to have a great deal more knowledge about the agency because he's working in that one agency. So I think that's a very natural accompaniment to the system that we have.
Don Hodel with us. His book, Called to Serve, My Path to President Reagan's Cabinet and Beyond. You're at Bonneville Power Administration through the end of 1977, and we perhaps pick things back up with the beginning of Reagan's first term, when you are serving as the Undersecretary of the Interior, eventually the Secretary of Energy, eventually Secretary of the Interior. How does one become a cabinet secretary or a cabinet undersecretary? What is that process like?
Scott, there are as many paths to a cabinet position as there are positions. Some people have excellent personal relationships with the president, and he turns to them for the expertise that he knows they have. Other people are well connected with key senators or congressmen who push for their nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Others, as in my case, I was known to somebody that President Reagan trusted and relied upon for a recommendation for the Secretary of Energy's job. Gained my position as the number two man, the Undersecretary of Interior, because years earlier I had worked with Jim Watt. Mm-hmm. We had become close personal friends, had great respect for each other's abilities, and he recognized that I had management skills that would be very helpful to him as secretary. So he pressed to have me become his undersecretary, even though that was not one of my aspirations. So my path to being his undersecretary was because of our experience. My path to being Secretary of Energy was because I had met and worked with a man named Tom Reed when he was running the Reagan campaign for president in 1968, and I ran the campaign for him in Oregon.
I want to ask a number of questions about this particular time in the book, and I want to start, I guess, with Jim Watt, who you knew very well and served under and with throughout your career in a couple of places. And the Reagan administration, and Watt specifically, had a reputation, was criticized in the media during this time for not supporting the environment. And you were there with him along the way. What was wrong about that characterization of Jim Watt and the Interior Department at that time? And how did you consider environmental questions during that time in the Reagan administration?
Very interesting question, because under Jimmy Carter, the Secretary of Interior, Cecil Andrus, announced publicly that whenever the environment was involved in an issue, the environment won, period. End of discussion. And we came in with an absolutely different attitude, which was that environment was one of the many important things that needed to be considered. But we really believed that a balanced approach made great sense, and that we did not have to choose between an improving environment and an adequate economy in this country. but it meant making decisions from time to time, specifically on what environmental matters had to be protected and what non-environmental matters needed to be protected or advanced. By the time we left Washington, I was pleased to see that even the Democratic National Convention recognized that we did not have to choose between the environment and economics. So we were successful to that extent. But the single issue environmental approach was in the Carter administration, and after the Reagan administration, it began to show up again in the national process.
Talking with Don Hodel, Secretary of the Interior, Secretary of Energy under President Ronald Reagan. His memoir is Called to Serve. When we come back, I'll ask a question about the Beach Boys and the 4th of July. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Premier Oil Change is celebrating 20 years of our friendly oil changes. A lot has changed in 20 years, but our commitment to fast, friendly, excellent service has remained the same. To celebrate our 20th birthday, we're offering $20 off any oil change. All you have to do is go to our website at premieroilchange.com and receive your gift. In Redding, check out our new location at 905 East Cypress. Discount also available at our Lake Boulevard, Anderson, and Palisadro locations.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Hey neighbors, have you ever wondered where you can find a store that truly feels like home? Well, look no further. Grange Co-op has been community-focused since 1934, and guess what? We're not just a store, we're owned by customers just like you. Yep, that's right, it's all about community here. So why choose Grange Co-op? When you shop with us, you're not just supporting a store, you're supporting a community. Grange Co-op has what you need for your home, garden, pets, and farm. Grange Co-op, where the values of yesterday meet the needs of today.
Look at your home from the street for a second. Now imagine it with rich, fresh color, clean trim, and a finish that looks great in the sunshine. Eagle Eye Painting can make that happen quickly and professionally. Our friendly crew focuses on the details through prep, careful edges, and a job site that's cleaned up when we're done. We're local, licensed, bonded, and insured, and we can walk you through the whole process in English or Spanish. Make this the season your home really stands out. Call Eagle Eye Painting at 530-410-1317 for your free exterior estimate. That's 530-410-1317 or visit 530painter.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the building? We all have to pay. The time is coming for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum, the host of Frontlines of Freedom, the nation's largest military news and talk radio show. We address the most pressing issues facing the security of our nation, our armed forces, our veterans, and their families. Please join us every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, KCNR, your talk radio show.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Don Hodel is with us. His new memoir is Called to Serve, My Path to President Reagan's Cabinet and Beyond. He was Secretary of Energy and Secretary of the Interior. We had just talked a little about James Watt and some misrepresentations about him and the department. Don, I'm a music fan and a great music lover, and it's, of course, a story that music lovers know or think they know, and even those who aren't perhaps know, the story about the Beach Boys and the 4th of July shows in the early 1980s. And the story goes that Jim Watt and the Interior Department banned the Beach Boys from performing on July 4th in Washington, D.C., unsavory characters. You were part of the department as this was unfolding. What do we have wrong? What do most people have wrong about the story about the Beach Boys and the 4th of July?
Well, I go into quite a bit of detail there because neither Jim Watt nor I were fans of that kind of music. We had no idea who the Beach Boys were. The National Park Service decided on its own while he was secretary that it would not have that type of music. It wasn't even the Beach Boys who had performed, but that type of music was bringing a drug culture, violence. We had rapes occurring during these performances. It was a mess on the National Mall. And so the Park Service on its own announced that we would not be having these performances in the future. Well, the Washington Post wrote an article that the Beach Boys had been banned by Jim Watt. And this was a big deal. And I walked into his office that morning and he looked at me and he said, "Who are the Beach Boys?" And I had to say, I didn't know. However, there was a furor over it and the story ran and the press pushed it. Nancy Reagan commented on how she had raised her kids on the Beach Boys. And Jim took a real beating over that.
Mm-hmm.
It was apparent to me later that it was because they were looking for something to beat him up with. Because when I was secretary, the Beach Boys were once again banned. And this time, the Beach Boys specifically were banned by the National Park Service. And I didn't get a question about it for 2 years.
A few more minutes here with Don Hodel. His book is Called to Serve, My Path to President Reagan's Cabinet and Beyond. As I've mentioned, you served then as Secretary of Energy for a few years and then came back as Secretary of the Interior for President Reagan's second term. It was during that second term that you described perhaps the biggest crisis you attended to during your time in D.C., and those are the 1988 Yellowstone wildfires. For those who don't remember, or even those perhaps who weren't around, tell us a bit about why that was such a big deal and how the Department of Interior could or could not respond to that sort of tragedy.
Well, look, Yellowstone National Park is about 2 million acres, and it is largely covered in forests. There are some incredibly beautiful areas and wildlife in that park. In the summer of 1988, very dry, several fires were started by lightning. A couple of fires occurred outside the park caused by, in one case, a logging operation, another a human action, and fire, a campfire or something. The Park Service standard, the routine was that they would not fight naturally occurring fires because fire was a natural part of the habitat.
Mm-hmm.
But they would fight a man-caused fire. Well, very rapidly these fires merged, and pretty soon a large part of the park was burning. Mid-July, I was informed that they had gotten the fires under control, and that very day, the winds came at in excess of 50 miles an hour, and we had the fires jump all the fire lines, and pretty soon the fire was completely out of control. At that point, We had help from the Department of Defense with 9,000 soldiers on the fire lines. We had 400 fire trucks from all over the West in the park trying to help fight the fire. And all we could do at that point was try to protect buildings and bridges, infrastructure, because there was just no way to get out there and stop the forest fire. The net result was that there was nothing really we could do to fight the fire until September came and the air got cooler and we got finally some snow to help dampen the fire, and finally it went out.
At the end, or near the end of President Reagan's second term, you helped describe what it's like to be a lame duck secretary as that second term comes to an end. And there is literally, as you point out in Call to Serve, nothing for you to do. There are cabinet secretaries in President Trump's second term who are about to experience this. Do you have any advice that you might like to pass along to them?
Well, my advice is don't kid yourself that you're going to have a great deal of influence after the presidential election. And in fact, your influence will decline as you get closer to the election. And once the election is over, and any policy decisions that you can still make have been made, there's nothing left for you to do. Nobody really cares at that point what you think or what you're going to do. Unless, I would think, somebody like the Secretary of State might be in the middle of a negotiation, but even there, his hands are substantially tied by the fact that his president is outgoing and the new president is coming in, regardless of party. So you just, power moves quickly, and the bureaucracy quickly recognizes there will be a new sheriff in town, and you're not that guy.
We spent some time with Don Hodel, haven't talked about Ronald Reagan, the man, the president, the person you served under for, I believe, all 8 years of his time in office. What qualities did you experience firsthand that Ronald Reagan possessed that made him an exceptional president?
You know, Scott, I don't think most people recognize the importance of his Christian commitment. You go back historically, and his mother was very staunch, and he accompanied her to her witnessing. And that was a part of the man. He was the most congenial man, but also a man of firm convictions. And I think that amazed the press, because I think their feeling was that a man who was that congenial wouldn't be tough.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he was tough. He knew what he wanted to accomplish. He had a vision for America. He was wonderful at casting that vision for the American people. The shining city on a hill. And he really understood the importance of his vision to helping the country move forward. And I think he did that remarkably well.
Stories about Ronald Reagan and much more in the memoir by Don Hodel. It's Called to Serve, My Path to President Reagan's Cabinet and Beyond. Don, thank you for your service to the country, and thank you for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Scott, thank you for giving me this opportunity to be with you.
Up next, Dr. Stephanie Laubach from Hillsdale's Physics Department tells us about her research into nanotechnology and magnetism. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
Join the heartbeat of our county every Monday at 6:35 a.m. on KCNR with the Town Hall Brief during the Sue McClain News Hour. Known for its unbiased reporting, the Town Hall Brief brings clear, local-focused updates and heartfelt discussions that unite our community. Got a story to share? Email townhallbriefs@gmail.com or connect via socials at Town Hall Brief on linktree.com to drop a DM. The Town Hall Brief, your community's voice for Shasta County News, Monday mornings at 6:35 on KCNR.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk show.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. Be sure to check out older episodes of this program, plus tons of other fantastic Hillsdale audio presentations and podcasts on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, podcast.hillsdale.edu, or wherever you get your audio. We're joined by Dr. Stephanie Laubeck. She is Associate Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Laubeck, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Talking today about your research and work into nanotechnology and magnetism. Interesting stuff. When people hear nanotechnology, they might imagine some sort of science fiction novel. What is it really, and how small are we talking about when we talk about nanotechnology?
Yeah. So nanotechnology is just any sort of a system that is manipulating matter or material on the nanoscale, which is between 1 to 100 nanometers. I'll give you an idea of what that size is. It's very small, but there's lots of different places where these are used. A lot of the applications that I'm more familiar with is in medicine. So just to give a couple examples, there's labs that have built little boxes out of DNA, and they'll put drugs inside, mm-hmm. and the lid of the box can be closed and have a key on it that's a receptor that will only be opened if it has a different receptor on it. And cancer cells have certain receptors that are different than other receptors. So essentially they can admit this drug and it will directly open once it hits a cancer cell. And so that's a way of doing direct drug delivery. So a lot of different drug delivery methods that people use. I love another one in Dr. Kasher's lab, which I collaborated with when I was at Ohio State. They had a cool system where bacteria basically had become resistant to drugs,
mm-hmm.
and the they would hide basically the drugs inside of a DNA structure. They called it the Trojan horse, and it wasn't shaped like a horse, but it was called the Trojan horse because essentially it would trick the bacteria into thinking that it wasn't a drug, and it would just take it in, think, oh, this is just some DNA, and it would bring it in, and then it would break down and deliver the drug to it. So it was like a way of directly delivering drugs to resistant bacteria. So there's lots of different uses in nano, like in medicine, but even in like material science, mm-hmm. you can use it to change properties of things. So like, for example, graphene is a really big hot topic one, which is basically a 2D layer of carbon that you can make, say, nanotubes where you roll the carbon on itself to make a tube, or you can make nano ribbons where they're just cut in strips. And if you add this to materials, you can strengthen the material. People are using it in concrete and things like this. You can also change the electrical properties of it because it's very conductive. So there's lots of ways that you can change basically material properties using this. And then even in like computers and electronics, nanotechnology is a huge part of this, making transistors smaller, which makes the computer run faster, helps us to store more information, process things at faster speeds. So there's lots of different areas that's being used.
And as far as size, when it comes to this nanotechnology, how small exactly are we talking about?
It's anything that's on the nanoscale. And to give you just an illustration of how small this is, if you imagine 1 nanometer being the size of a pea, like a pea that you eat, a school bus would be what we'd consider a micrometer.
Okay.
A micrometer is 1,000 times smaller than a millimeter. So if you think of your ruler, you have millimeters on your ruler. Those are the smallest division. So 1,000 times smaller than that is the micrometer. That's your school bus. And then the meter, which is, you know, how long your meter stick is, your arm span is like 1.5 to 2 meters, depending on how tall you are. A meter, when 1 nanometer is a pea, would be driving from L.A. to New York and back again. So you can imagine that pea to that meter. And as far as, like, on the biological side, your hair is actually, you can see the diameter of your hair. I mean, it's obviously pretty small. That is about 0.1 millimeters. So that's a tenth of that division. Your white blood cells or cells in general are more like on the micrometer mm-hmm. region. And then the proteins, which are the things that do all the work inside your cells, those are on the nanometer size. So you can imagine the pea is sort of like moving around inside of the school bus, and that's the cell, right, which we have to look under the microscope in order to see.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about this DNA work.
Okay.
A lot of your work involves building these little structures out of DNA. How does DNA become a building material for machines?
Yes, that's a good question. Picture would help with this, but I can give a little bit of an illustration. So, I mean, essentially, you can build machines out of anything, right? You can build out of wood, you can build out of metal. Our building material is DNA. And the reason why DNA is so helpful on the nanoscale is because it has these small base pairs that interact or bind with one another. And so most people are probably familiar with the 4 bases, adenine, thymine, guanine, and cytosine. Adenine and thymine will bind together with 2 hydrogen bonds based on their chemical structure, and guanine and cytosine will bind together with 3 hydrogen bonds. And essentially, these base pairs will form a sequence. We call it single-stranded DNA, and they don't like to stay single-stranded, mm-hmm. so they naturally want to find that other base that will complement them.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do that, they form the double-stranded DNA, which most people can know that forms a helix. And so that helix is essentially what we view as our building block. In that helix has a very specific diameter. It's about 2 nanometers across, so you can imagine it's sort of like a cylinder. It's 2 nanometers across. And as far as how tall it is, depends on how many base pairs you put in. So let's say you want to make it to be 3.4 nanometers tall. That would be 10 base pairs that you stack on. Every base pair you add is a 0.34 nanometer increase. So you can imagine you have the precision, unlike if you're building out of wood or metal, you can't cut down something to the nanometer scale, right? This one allows us to be with precision of 0.4 or 0.34 nanometers. So that's the basic, right? Is essentially we have these helixes that are just rods, and we can change how long they are. And you might say, well, what if I want to make more than a rod? Well, let's say you want to make a platform, a 2D platform. Well, then you just put the rods or the helixes side by side, and you can make a bigger platform. And let's say you want to make something 3D. Well, you can stack those platforms on top of each other, and you can make it more of a creator shake. Of course, you can imagine a cube pretty easily, but I can make it into a football shape by changing how long each of those rods at each of those places are at. And so that's essentially what we do. We use a technique called DNA origami. So it's about 2006 when sort of this DNA nanotechnology actually sort of took off because of this technique.
Stephanie Laubeck is with us, Associate Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College, talking about nanotechnology and magnetism. So again, some of your research here uses magnetic fields to move some of these DNA structures. So how does magnetism help to control something, again, that is so small?
Yeah, so the magnetism allows us to apply what we'd call magnetic forces. And, of course, you would say, well, DNA doesn't seem very magnetic, right? And it's very true. With weak forces, you're not going to magnetize DNA at all. And so what we actually do is we use magnetic particles. So a lot of times there's beads. There's ones that are on the micron size. There's also ones on the nano size that you can attach to the DNA nanomachines. And then by applying an external magnetic field, essentially, you can think of this bead as being like a little bar magnet that wants to line up with the field, just like a compass needle. So if I point the field in one direction, the needle will turn to line up with that field. And so if it's attached to our structure, it will then move our structure. So if it's a hinge and you have a bead on the end, you can open and close the hinge just by sweeping the field across. And essentially, you're just allowing it to apply a force directly through the bead onto the nanostructure itself. So it's really cool. That was one of, honestly, the big questions when first people started building these nanomachines was actually like, these are really cool, but how do we move them?
Sure.
And that was a big question for a while. And the cool thing about using magnetism is it actually allows us to do direct actuation. Most methods, there's only one other one that is a direct actuation, which is using electric fields. But all the other ways are indirect. They're probabilistic, and they take more time oftentimes to do it.
Dr. Stephanie Laubeck from Hillsdale's Physics Department is with us. More on magnetism and nanotechnology in just a few moments. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
The only real estate agent I trust right here in Redding and Shasta County is Josh Parker with Josh Parker Real Estate. Now, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Many homeowners are curious about their current home's value, but don't necessarily want to invite an agent over yet. Now, you have a tool on your website which helps with that. How does that work?
I think you're talking about our value calculator. If you go online at our website, you can check the value of your home instantly. And what it's doing is it's providing you with access to a Rolodex of other properties that have sold in your immediate area. And it's adjusting for your property compared to those to give you an estimate of value. But I'll give you a secret. If you give us a phone call, in addition to doing that, we'll ask you just a few more questions around your property. And we could probably get you within 1% or 2% of what the actual value is just over the phone.
All right, thanks for keeping us up to date. Go online to reddinghomes.com. That's Redding, R-E-D-D-I-N-G, homes.com, or just Google Josh Parker.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hello, my name is Lindsay Myers. I am the president and CEO of Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support and partnership over the years.
Hi, I'm Heather Kellenhofer, president of NorCal Breast Cancer Connection, continuing the legacy of NorCal Think Pink. We would like to express our sincere gratitude to Redding Rancheria for all the support over the years.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Invest in your future today with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready fast with one of our high-demand career technical programs like nursing, heavy equipment, and welding, or work on transferring to a CSU or UC with guaranteed placement with the TAG or ADT programs. Full-time students get 2 years tuition-free. Fall classes start August 17th. Visit ShastaCollege.edu/start to make your success a reality at Shasta College.
Hi friends, RC here from Tobacco and Brew, sharing this month's Cigar of the Humidor. H. Upman Sunrise, grown, fermented, aged at the A.J. Fernandez factory, this stick is medium in body, offering an Ecuadorian Connecticut seed wrapper, along with robust, hand-selected Nicaraguan long filler. Notes of coffee, cedar, and nuts make this a perfect cigar for any time of day. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the building? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Stephanie Lawbeck is with us from Hillsdale's Physics Department, where she is Assistant Professor of Physics, talking with her about her research into nanotechnology and magnetism. Dr. Lawbeck,
one application that people hear about is targeted drug delivery. Can nanotechnology help to change the way that medicine works?
Yeah, for sure. So one of the big things that we're sort of working on in my lab is moving towards trying to make nanomachines that will be used for medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, so there's sort of two main things. So one is bacteria that have become resistant to our antibiotics. So we start to call these super bacteria. Once they start to become very resistant to drugs, it's hard to kill them. And so a lot of our drugs today are basically chemical reactions that are taking place. And bacteria easily change, can more easily morph to change, to react and not to resist basically those chemical reactions. And so what the nanomachine would allow us to do is actually a mechanical mechanism to kill the cell instead of a chemical one. And so an example of this would actually be a professor actually at Rice University. His name is Dr. Tour. He has developed machines not out of DNA, but just from molecules. They're nanomachines. And some of them are like a jackhammer.
Mm-hmm.
And what he does is he can actually shoot light, different wavelengths of light at it, and it causes it to sort of vibrate up and down. And if he can basically put a molecule on there so it finds this bacteria cell, he can then jackhammer and destroy basically the membrane of that cell, and then it's either killed or now you can administer the drug and it can get inside. And so what we're looking at doing, I was like, that's a really creative idea. So I thought we could do something like this too. Light, of course, can't pass all the way through your body, but mm-hmm. magnetic fields do, and they're very safe. We apply very large magnetic fields, say, for example, in an MRI.
Right.
And so this would be a great way of, if we could build a machine that would essentially, you know, be like a jackhammer or hammer or something like this that would basically mechanically destroy a cell. And again, you can target it by putting certain receptors on it that would, you know, respond to only cancer cell receptors or these bacteria receptors and so forth, you'd actually be able to target them and destroy them directly instead of killing other things. So that's, those are sort of, yeah, cancer cells and then these super bacteria, sort of two big topics that people are working on doing.
Dr. Stephanie Lawbeck is with us, Associate Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College. Nanotechnology and magnetism, when you're working at this tiny scale, how do you observe what's actually happening? What does a lab look like?
Right. That's a really good question. So you can't actually look at something on the nanoscale in a microscope. So mm-hmm. a lot of people sort of maybe picture us looking down in a microscope. That actually only seems or can only resolve on the micron level. So what you have to do is actually label these nanostructures with something that we call fluorophore. And a fluorophore is something where when you shoot a certain wavelength of light, it will emit a different wavelength of light. It will excite the electron, and it will then emit a different wavelength of light. essentially what we can do is we can label our structures with different fluorophores, and then based on the light signal that they're emitting, because light spreads out, we can see the light that it forms, mm-hmm. even though we can't see the structure. And so that's one way. Visually, like if you want to see it happening in real time, you actually have to use fluorescence, essentially. So that's a big one. But there's other ways. Like right now, a lot of the structures we've been working on, we actually been using micron-sized beads to attach to these nanostructures. And you think, how can that happen? That's like a huge scaling difference. We use these nano rods mm-hmm. that are micron in length but have nanometer thickness. And so they can attach to the nano machine, but also reach out to the micron size rod. And the micron size beads we can see. And so it's very interesting. You'll see a bead moving in a certain way, but you can't see the machine itself. But because it's constraining how the bead moves, you can actually observe exactly what's happening to the bead. So that's another way. Now, if you want to observe like a static, like you don't need to actually see it in action. You just want to like image, get a nice good image of it. You can use things like an AFM. We have one of those on campus, which is basically like a way of seeing like the height profile essentially of the mm-hmm. structure. It mm-hmm. shoots a, there's a little cantilever and it shoots a laser down at the cantilever. And as it goes across the surface, it has to go up to go over the surface. So the laser beam goes up. And it sort of traces out the structure of the surface. So that's one way. So we use an AFM to visualize. People use other things like a TEM, which is using electrons to visualize stuff. But there's many different ways, but those are just some examples.
You have students who have worked on some of these projects, who are working on some of your projects. What do Hillsdale College undergraduates get to do with this kind of research?
Yeah, so they get to do a lot of stuff. Like pretty much they're involved in every step of this part of the project. So my students will build the structures in the lab, which involves a lot of biological techniques using pipettes and thermocyclers and centrifuges and all this stuff. So they get to learn the DNA origami technique. They will run experiments where they're applying the magnetic fields and watching the structures change, looking at them under fluorescence, or observing the micron-sized beads in bright fields. And then they'll also do the analysis. Like normally afterwards, we're analyzing. We have to analyze the videos and things that we're taking. And so there's a lot of, you know, maybe even coding and mm-hmm. just analysis that goes involved in that. So there's like a whole stretch of what they do, but they get to be a part of all of it.
As you're talking, I'm thinking back to a conversation I had with Dr. Russell from the biology department about bacteria and films. So does your research ever cross over with work that other professors here at Hillsdale are doing?
Yes, that's actually a great question. So actually this summer, I'm collaborating with him on a project. And we have a student. He actually reached out to me because he'd seen a presentation I gave at a faculty meeting. And he was like, hey, I grow these biofilms, and they are very resistant sometimes to drugs. Mm-hmm. And so we have to get the drugs past the biofilms. Can you use your machines to drill into them? And I was like, well, I don't have the machines yet. We're still working towards that. Probably in the next couple of years, we'll have the machines that we can drill into these.
Uh-huh.
But I said we could try just some preliminary testing with the beads. So there are actually people right now that have used nano-sized beads as well as micron-sized beads to either drill into, you know, materials or plaque or things like this. And so I said we could just try the beads. And I have a nano-sized beads and I have a micro-sized bead in my lab. And so we are doing very early on experimental result tests, right? And we have a student working with us. I've showed her. She's growing up the bacteria, and I'm also showing her how to run the magnetic fields. And so, yeah, we're early on in this stage, so we're excited to see. We either expect that the larger beads might just swipe the films off the surface, which would be good. Mm-hmm, it would be also mm-hmm. a good way of getting rid of them. They actually do this right now with like dental stuff. Like they actually,
right.
It's actively being used. And then the other one with the nano-sized beads, we think that one has more potential to actually drill holes through the biofilm. So we'll see what we get, but we are actively working on doing a project based on this.
So are we in the early days of this research, meaning nanotechnology? Are we already starting to see changes or impacting everyday technology?
Yeah, so I would say it's definitely already impacting the technology. People probably just don't realize where it's all mm-hmm. being used. I mean, even in medicine, it's already there. And probably a lot of your materials and stuff, and even computers. So just people don't realize it's there because you just don't see it, but
right.
it's making things more efficient and better. But I would say there's still a lot of growth. And even in the DNA origami community, I mean, 2006 was when that technique first came out, and people could make, you know, simple structures. They would make 2D static structures. Then they made 3D, you know, static structures. Then by like about 2015, we started seeing more like dynamic structures, but no one knew how to move it. And so now we're starting to get into the time where people are like, oh, we can actually move the parts on these machines. And in order to use a machine as a machine, right, where it can do work, you have to be able to move them. And so we're really just now starting to see that. Mm-hmm. And of course, especially in medicine, there's a lot more higher standards you have to do before it gets into it. So a lot of even the stuff I was mentioning in like Dr. Tour's lab, that stuff is all things that like they're doing clinical testing in mice and things like that, or doing, you know, tests on petri dishes. You know, we're going to test it with bacteria that's grown on a film, right? Mm-hmm. But not in a body or anything like this. There's so much testing that you have to do initially before it gets into there. But even in medicine right now, like, I mean, they use nanoparticles for MRI contrast and things like this. You probably didn't realize, maybe you got contrast and you didn't know, oh, there was nanoparticles in there that allowed them to image this better. So it's definitely already affecting our society, but I do think there's still a lot of growth and potential that it has.
Dr. Stephanie Laubeck is Associate Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College. Talk about her work in nanotechnology and magnetism. Dr. Laubeck, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Yeah, thanks so much.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Don Hodel. His memoir, Called to Serve, My Path to President Reagan's Cabinet and Beyond. And Dr. Stephanie Laubeck from Hillsdale's Physics Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Looking for quality outdoor gear while supporting a local veteran-owned business? Check out NorCal Outfitters, proudly based right here in Redding, California. Built on a passion for the outdoors and the values that make our community strong, NorCal Outfitters offers apparel and gear designed for hunters, anglers, outdoorsmen, and anyone who loves the outdoor lifestyle. And right now, we're excited to announce our partnership with Ultimate Predator Outfitters to give you a chance to win an incredible 3-day guided California hog hunt experience. Your ticket includes lodging, expert guides, and the opportunity to create memories that last a lifetime. Whether you're a seasoned hunter or looking to experience your first guided hunt, this is an opportunity you won't want to miss. Support local, support veteran owned, and enter today by purchasing your raffle tickets at ncofit.com. That's ncofit.com. NorCal Outfitters, born for the wild, worn for life.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
Got an old car sitting in your yard? Donate it to Reading Piano Angels. We accept all kinds of vehicles. Cars, trucks, RVs, boats, motorcycles, even trailers and go-karts. Thanks to local support, Piano Angels has provided over 600 pianos to families, schools, churches, senior homes, and nonprofits across Northern California. Donate today by visiting readingpianoangels.com or call 530-510-1903. That's 530-510-1903.
Shasta County. Tired of filtered news? Welcome to Shasta Unfiltered, your trusted online newspaper for the North State. Straight facts on Reading politics, city council moves, local events, and the national stories that actually hit your wallet, like federal funding changes and job trends right here at home. No agenda, no paid spin disguised as news. Just honest reporting and the stories you need. Visit ShastaUnfiltered.com. Your community reported right.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum, the host of Frontlines of Freedom, the nation's largest military news and talk radio show.
we address the most pressing issues facing the security of our nation, our armed forces, our veterans, and their families. Please join us every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio show.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.